Yeah. Awesome. Bring it on.
So how does it make you
feel?
Yeah.
Yes, welcome to Three Men and a Feeling with me today, as I have been for the other parts of this series. Longtime educator, critic, fanatic and tragic, OAM, John Hendry. And also with me, clinical psychologist, amongst many other hats in that realm, Andrew Fuller. Andrew, John, me, we're talking today about hope. Do you think there's much hope in the world today, John?
I would hope there is, Michael. I believe we live in a pretty decent place. But hope is the thing that draws us forward. And I think it's really important in the time that we're living that we remain hopeful. If hopeless appears, then back we go, and we go into self-protection, and the old brain kicks in very powerfully. If you ask Andrew about the old brain, you'll discover that it is a really dominant force in our lives and in the lives of communities.
Well, we've talked about the old brain as being sort of one of the primal foci, if you like, for love and hate, because they're the two emotions that hit the old brain with full force, and that's why sometimes we find it very difficult to control our behaviour around those feelings. But can I ask you, Andrew, when it comes to hope, how do we know it's not false hope?
I'm probably a little bit more pessimistic than John. I think that we live in a world that does try and rob people of hope, and so people can become a bit hopeless, which sadly, of course, leads to them becoming helpless, which of course in turn means that they lose their power. So hopeless people aren't empowered people. And so one of the falsities of hope is where we lose it without reason. And we can lose it because of pessimism, because of negative messages, and where we forget to see the magic in the world, really. So I think a greater fear really is not so much that we have false hopes that are inflated, but that we have unsadly diminished hopes and lose hope for all of ourselves. Because of course, when we lose hope, we don't help ourselves and we don't help other people.
John, you would have, in your time working within the education system, seen young people, and when I say young, I mean sort of late teens, people struggling sometimes with a sense of hope. They might be coming to the end of their school career and looking towards a future in a workforce, a workforce which is these days very casualised and very part-time, where some of the skills they've spent 12 years learning may not be as valued as they'd hoped. There's that word. How did you help them sort of bridge that lack of hope that they may have felt about their future?
I think you have to build within them a chance of establishing some sort of system approach to what is presented before them. And if they're hopeful, then they'll be able to strategically, very carefully, put it in perspective and work well. If they're not as hopeful, or if they're even hopeless, then they don't have the capacity to put a strategy in place.
So if students came to you and said, look, I'm feeling hopeless about my future, what sort of bits of armoury would you equip them with to try and change their perspective?
I'd get them to look at what they've done well. I'd get them to look at things that they've been able to appreciate, that they enjoy doing, and so forth, and work through from that strength basis in establishing a sense of worth within themselves. It's very interesting, and the students are always looking to try to discover the world before them.
Yep.
It's incredibly difficult for them to do that.
Here's where we get to a really interesting part about emotions generally, because our emotions work best when they flow. So very, very few of us are in a hopeful state all the time. I mean, it'd be lovely to be there, but we all kind of have swings and roundabouts in our life, as we know. And so one of the things that's important to realise is that emotions function best for all of us when they flow through our lives. So the trick's in the word, really, emotion. And so keeping the idea that, yes, you may have times when you feel hopeless, but realising that they're not a permanent state of being. They're not a reflection of who you are as a person. They might be a a reflection of the times or the circumstances you face yourself at the moment, but you'll regain hopefulness if you basically sit and start to observe the best of life.
How do you find the best of life when sometimes all around you seems quite dark?
It's interesting to do that, I think, because it can be incredibly hard to see beyond yourself, and then you become focused internally on your own state, and that means you're basically preoccupied with your internal state, and you don't care about your internal state at the same time. So one of the great kind of paradoxes of depression is that you're preoccupied with the very thing you don't care about, the self. And so the way to really get beyond that partly is to slowly, gently start to treat yourself well. And generally with my clients in therapy, one of the first points of it is just to ask them to go and observe beauty anywhere that they can find it, in trees, in nature, to start to look for it. And perhaps not see it in themselves initially, because that's probably too big an ask, but just to spend some time in the world noticing what is beautiful, if anything, and to come back and talk about that. And we start from those small grains of beauty and build our way back to hope.
John, I imagine too that in your world where you were involved in both sort of a pastoral care, if you like, of students under your umbrella, but also totally involved in sport, that physical activity is one of those pathways back to hope, isn't it?
Yes. Physical health is critically important for young people to have hope. So if they sleep well, if they exercise well, and if they eat well, then they're in a better place.
Hang on, we are talking about the same young people, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
These are the same young people who love to stay up late at night,
yes,
who love to eat hamburgers, and often don't get enough sleep. Every day is a party day.
So that are things that you would address with students who are struggling with a hope factor. If that hope is not a powerful element in your relationship with yourself, and we've talked about the five underpinning elements of a relationship.
Just remind people.
Just on trust, forgiveness, integrity, hope, and compassion. Hope is critically important because it gives you a sense of purpose for yourself. And once you've developed a sense of purpose for yourself, then you can reach out to others. And that gives you a sense of meaning, which really, if you like, compounds the hope factor within your well-being. And it gives you a sense of direction. Students are really looking for a way forward. They don't want to stay hopeless. They want to be hopeful. And so, you know, all the factors that relate to students, I mentioned the physical factors, but also their relational factors. So with their parents, with their peers, with their teachers, or with their bosses at work, with their sporting coaches, all those things impact directly on their sense of hope.
Andrew, do you find that younger people who have issues finding hope in their lives turn out to be older people with the same issue?
We're all vulnerable to it, but certainly some people are definitely more vulnerable than others. I think they're perhaps the more sensitive people at times, or perhaps the people who are just more dispositionally a bit more negative, a bit more pessimistic, are probably going to have to work harder than most of us to sort of find that beauty, to find that hope, to find that meaning in their relationship.
Because can I say, those who find hope, who find meaning and beauty easier than others, isn't that because they're more vulnerable? They're willing to be more vulnerable to that feeling. Whereas if you're feeling hopeless, in some ways that's the ultimate protection, because it means you're never disappointed.
That's right. So basically hopelessness is a position of being guarded, of being switched off, of not being open.
Yeah.
So to be hopeful requires a sense of being seen as idiotic or deluded, being vulnerable.
And I think that's a really strong stigma attached to hope.
Yes.
Because what it goes with optimism,
yeah,
and that goes with almost naivete.
Well, that's right. So here we need to make a distinction between optimism and hope. I mean, optimism is a nice disposition, but it rarely has a sort of a plan about how you're going to do it. I can be optimistic that basically I'm going to win the lottery, but unless I put in a ticket, I'm not going to have much chance. Whereas if I'm hopeful that the ticket that I've bought basically may have a chance of winning, at least I've made some actions based on it. So,
but hope, I'm still pragmatic about the chances of outcome.
That's right. That's right. So hope has some pragmatism, but it has some action associated with it. Optimism can have that, but doesn't necessarily have that. So they're different states.
Okay, that's interesting though, because what you're talking about there is that optimism may have a sense of blindness to it in terms of the reality that is giving you that optimism. But then we began this conversation by talking about false hope.
Well, optimism can be false hope. I can think that things will turn out well regardless of whether I do anything to create that or not. That's optimism.
Right.
Whereas hope is saying there is worth me investing and making a contribution in this relationship or in this world because I can be hopeful for better outcomes of it.
John Hendry, let's finish with you, if I may, because you've been in education for something like 34 years before you've retired, and I know you're working as a consultant in a range of areas, including places like UNESCO. But let me ask you, as someone who's now officially retired, how do you define hope for you as opposed to what hope was when you were, say, 30 years old?
Hope for me is that I can make a contribution to the lives of others. And I think that's really powerful for me, but it's powerful for all those who possess hope, because what they want to do is to give to others. And in so doing, to catch your word again, it adds meaning to their lives and to the lives of others. So hope is a really powerful tool in establishing a sense of worth.
So that's what Andrew was alluding to.
Exactly.
If you ascribe hope with action, as you do,
yes.
I hope I can improve the world by giving to it,
yes.
Then it becomes a very empowering feeling.
Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, actually in one of his many reviews of relationships, favoured hope over optimism because he saw optimism as passive and hope as being quite active. And Andrew made the point that it is taking an action.
John Hendry, Andrew Fuller, we've touched on hope like we've touched on many feelings so far. And if anyone listening would like to join us and become maybe a fourth man with a feeling or even the first woman in this conversation, we'd very much welcome your input. You can always email us or voice memo to the same place. When I say voice memo, that's where you hold your phone up to your mouth, a smartphone, and there should be a voice recording app on your phone where you hit the red button and you just tell us what you think about what you've been hearing and whether you think we're hitting the mark or there's things we've missed. I have no doubt we've missed quite a few things. You've been pointing that out already. But we'll get back to some of the homework you've set for us as well. If you'd like to get in contact with John, Andrew or myself, then it's lifematters@abc.net.au. That's voice memo and email. Next time we meet, gentlemen, what are we discussing?
Compassion.
Compassion.
There's something that seems to be in very small amounts globally at the moment. We'll catch up with these two for Three Men and a Feeling. Compassion next time. See you later.
Yeah.